Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell and CFRC's Arts Coordinator Genevieve Hinch. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Aaron McCauley, covering Kingston City Council's approval of the 2026-27 Housing Program funding allocations.
Hello, I'm Ara McCauley, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today on YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m., or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach out to our news team at news@cfrc.ca. The City of Kingston approved a 2026-2027 fiscal year funding allocation under the Canada Ontario Community Housing Initiative, COCHI, Ontario Priorities Housing Initiative, OPHI, and the Homelessness Prevention Program, HPP. These programs are delivered by the City of Kingston, supported through shared provincial and federal funding. The funding supports the repair and renewal of existing housing assets, the development of new affordable housing, and the delivery of homelessness prevention and response services, including rental assistance to low and moderate income households, home ownership assistance, and tenant support services. The report noted that many social housing properties, such as rent-geared-to-income housing, have reached a stage in their life cycle where reinvestment is required to ensure long-term viability. The report notes that the Canada-Ontario Housing Benefit funding will support additional households to access safe housing, with a focus on individuals experiencing homelessness or transitioning from supported housing environments into independent living. Canada-Ontario Community Housing Initiative funding focuses on the preservation and sustainability of existing social housing, including capital repairs, maintaining affordability, and contributing to the expansion of rent-assisted units in partnership with local nonprofit housing providers. For the 2026-27 program year, $1,103,285 will be allocated to social housing capital repairs, supporting high and medium priority projects identified through building condition assessments. An additional $1.5 million in funding will be allocated to support new affordable housing development. The Ontario Priorities Housing Initiative provides the city with additional flexible funding to address local housing priorities, such as new affordable housing development, homeownership down payment assistance, and emergency repairs and accessibility improvements. Funding for the 2026-27 fiscal year will be directed towards the Home Ownership Program, the Kingston Frontenac Renovates Program, and housing support services. This will support renters and first-time home buyers in accessing home ownership opportunities, enable the completion of urgent repairs and accessibility improvements for low to moderate income homeowners, and provide tenant support services within social housing to promote housing stability, greater self-reliance, and social inclusion. The home ownership program was initially funded with $150,000 in municipal funding, with an additional $266,000 in OPHI funding, and $100,000 later allocated from the home ownership program's revolving fund, which captures repayments from past program participants and reinvests those funds to provide additional households with financial assistance to purchase their first home. The program assisted 7 households in the last fiscal year and is expected to support an additional 7 or 8 households in the coming fiscal year. COHB also supports a portable housing benefit for eligible renters, helping to offset monthly rental costs. At present, 384 local households are receiving this benefit, and the city anticipates an additional 60 households will be supported in the 2026-27 fiscal year, with priority going towards individuals experiencing homelessness or those ready to move from transitional housing to more independent living arrangements. The province has committed to maintain the COHB funding through March 31, 2029. However, no commitment has been made regarding funding beyond this date. Councillor Stephen asked staff what might happen to this funding at the end of the current term.
The province has committed to maintaining this funding through March 31st, 2029. However, no commitment has been made regarding funding beyond that date. So my concern is that if this money is being used to help prop up so many families, this is only going until 2029. Are we just hoping the province is going to continue? Do we know?
Do you, Your Worship? Thank you for the question. That is something I can say comes up at every sector meeting and in terms of advocacy to the province. We have had this happen before. There was a program, Strong Community Rent Supplement Program, that ended in 2023. And it was a very similar. Thousands of families across the province that were in receipt of this funding, and they were facing that cliff as well. About a year before, the province rolled that program into the Homelessness Prevention Program. So that was addressed. I anticipate with the National Housing Strategy, we'll count on the renewal of that strategy and the funding that will need to be put forward to support these families. There are so many households and families that are receiving this when you think of Toronto alone. So this is a pretty significant issue that we know is on the radar of the ministry and in their dealings and working with the federal government to renew the National Housing Strategy. So I don't know for sure, but our sense is that it'll be very similar, and that's our hope and what we're advocating for.
As a condition of funding, each municipality is required to contribute to Ontario's commitment to create 19,660 rent-assistant units by March 31st, 2028. For the Kingston-Frontenac service area, a target of 23 rent-assisted units has been assigned as an annual rent-assisted unit target, which can include new construction, newly established rent supplements, recommissioned units returned to service, and newly acquired affordable housing units. Councillor Sanek asked staff about the city's progress on meeting its housing targets overall.
I know that the province brought in Bill 23 in October 2022, and with that came housing targets. From what I see, but maybe I see it wrong, but I'm hoping that it's right, it looks like Kingston has met its housing targets since Bill 23 came out. Is that correct?
Thank you, and through you, Mr. Mayor. That's correct.
Are the housing targets guided by the number of permits? And then what's the last year we have data for the permits? Is it 2025?
I will say we do not know where the provincial number 800 units a year for Kingston came from, but it was generally in alignment with the number of housing starts we were seeing in the early part of the 2010s. But since the housing targets have been enacted, not only has Kingston met, we've exceeded it on an annualized basis by 300 to 400 units, depending on the year. So we far and exceeded that. The last year we have complete data for is 2025, which is reflected in the report. But I did check the numbers today, and right now we are sitting at about 470 units midway through the year for 2026.
Despite this progress, Councillor Ridge highlighted the significant increase in average rental rates in Kingston year over year, noting it as a cause for concern.
One of the things I want to highlight is actually on Table 2 of the report, which goes over average rental costs. So a couple of pieces that I wanted to highlight, but I hope that everybody gets a chance to look at this. For example, a three-bedroom rental, the average rental increases from 23 to 25 by 27%. Year-over-year increase for average one-bedroom apartment from 24 to 25 is 13%, 12.9 technically. So I think it highlights some very alarming trends in terms of affordability issues.
The final element of the strategy outlined in the report is the Homelessness Prevention Program, HPP, a provincially funded initiative that supports the delivery of housing assistance and support services to individuals and families who are experiencing homelessness or are at risk of homelessness. The program supports a range of services including emergency shelter solutions, supportive housing, community outreach, rent banks, and other housing assistance and stabilization supports. This funding may also be used for capital projects that create, repair, or renew supportive housing and shelter infrastructure. The Kingston-Frontenac service area received an HPP allocation of $8,766,000 for 2026-27, unchanged from the previous fiscal year. Councillor Stephen asked about assistance available specifically for families.
I read something recently. It was by Public Progress. There were multiple stories of people in our community who are experiencing homelessness and their families. So my question for staff is, you know, in addition to all of this excellent work that is happening with the money that we have, what are we doing for families, not just individuals?
Ms. Bacon-Hartley.
It does take a coordinated response. It's with the city, with the shelter, with the agencies, and also really working with community organizations. We can't do it alone. Within our department, we do fund agencies through prevention diversion workers and also family prevention diversion and also family housing first workers. So their main goal is really to work with the families, kind of help to identify what the barriers and to help remove them. Sometimes that's with the landlord, sometimes that's helping look for locations where there's opportunities. They also look to connect them to resources and family. And we provide financial supports. So that's through our homelessness prevention program. There is opportunity non-repayable grants. So that's to support families with rental arrears, utility arrears, last month's rent if needed, done through Ontario Works, if the family's on Ontario Works, and through the Salvation Army. And we also have the Canada-Ontario Housing Benefit. So that is something that we look at strategically to support a number of communities, vulnerable individuals across the city. We're currently, I believe it's about 385 families are being supported with that fund, an additional 60 that were just awarded. So that's where they'll be able to work with the Housing First, locate a unit, and then access, they'll help them with the application and to work through that.
HPP funding, including prevention and diversion, street outreach, Housing First, and homelessness prevention funds, will continue to support housing stability through investments in services such as case management, rent supplements, and housing support programs that help individuals maintain housing and avoid eviction. The report states that the strategic allocation of resources supports a balanced approach that addresses immediate needs while advancing long-term sustainable solutions to homelessness, adding that HPP-funded programs serve many of Kingston's most vulnerable residents, including women and children fleeing violence, seniors, Indigenous peoples, visible minorities, youth, persons with disabilities, and individuals experiencing mental health and substance use challenges.
Thank you to Era McCauley for that story. Coming up next, we have Dinah Jansen reading a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Napanee Beaver, Sarah Williams, about the environmental impacts a proposed data center could have for Napanee.
Thank you, Jesse. Data centers are spreading like wildfire as Canada's bid for investment feeds the growing appetite for AI technology. And while public sentiment appears to be souring towards large-scale data centers, one such facility could soon be coming to Greater Napanee. In the changing landscape of data centers, the Ontario Data Center Tracker is a helpful public resource that provides updates and information on the growing proliferation of these centers throughout the province. According to this database, a large-scale data center is currently being discussed for Napanee, known as the Napanee Data Park, the facility that has been proposed by Napanee Environmental Complex, Inc. The site location is unconfirmed, but would reportedly be in an industrial park north of the 401. Small 5-megawatt data centers have been common in cities for decades, but new superpowered data centers that power AI, ones that could use up to 100 megawatts of capacity, are becoming more common. These data centers are known as hyperscalers. To put the Napanee Data Park within context, the proposed facility would consume 250 megawatts of power. The news of the potential data center in Napanee comes after the February 2026 decision by the Town of Greater Napanee Council to amend a bylaw officially changing the rules for general industrial zones to include data processing centers. Prior to this amendment, a proposed data center would have required a zoning bylaw amendment, which in turn would have required public consultation. According to the Ontario Data Center Tracker, developers will now bypass the zoning bylaw amendment phase and move directly to what is known as site plan control. Furthermore, they note that under the provincial guidelines, no mandatory public consultation meetings are required for site plan approvals. As for the possible data center in Napanee, no site plan control application has been submitted to the town so far. With a growing number of large data centers across the country and province, Canadians are becoming more aware of the environmental repercussions of these mammoth facilities. Among the most heavily discussed environmental impacts is water consumption. According to the Environmental and Energy Study Institute, large data centers can consume 5 million gallons of water per day. This is the equivalent water use of a town populated by 10 to 50,000 people. Napanee has a population of 17,000. A recent Angus Reid poll suggests a large contingent of Canadians, 68% of respondents, would oppose a large-scale data center being built within a few blocks of their home. While the increase in data centers may have escaped the attention of most Canadians, that is surely about to change with growing federal attention focused on AI. The increase in large data centers is directly linked to AI, and in June, Prime Minister Mark Carney presented AI for All, Canada's new artificial intelligence strategy. billed as a strategy to build trust, create opportunities, and reinforce Canadian sovereignty, it is informed by consultations that took place in 2025. Over 11,000 submissions were received from workers, entrepreneurs, researchers, students, and community leaders across the country. A 28-member AI strategy task force was also consulted. At present, whether a data center will be built in Greater Napanee is unclear. What is clear, however, is that the municipal bylaw has paved the way for this possibility.
Thank you to Dinah Jansen and Sarah Williams for that story. Coming up next, we have a story from Ted Evans, the local journalism initiative reporter for CJAI Amherst Island Radio, about capital grant applications in Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township's Community Grant Committee will be recommending that Council approve just over $40,400 for an outdoor multi-sport recreational space at Ernestown Intermediate and Secondary School. Committee member Pierce noted her support for the request.
I think this is another example of another agent of government, basically the school board, doing something for the community that has a benefit for the whole community, not just the school community. And it provides another facility within Odessa where they are needed. And I think it's a great idea.
The committee will also be recommending council approve just over $96,400 for the installation of a new ramp, signage, and roof repairs at Royal Canadian Legion No. 623. A representative of the Legion, John Marshall, spoke about the quotes they received for the work.
The first quote was $55,000. The only thing is the guy hadn't put a roof on like this in 10 years. And also, instead of using the proper stone, he was going to use patio stones. Therefore, we checked his investigation and found out that for the next price up, $80,000, this guy's been in business for many years. Guarantees, warranty on it, workmanship on it. So we'd rather have a better roof put on the property the first time and only time, and instead of having approved for patio stone on top of our flat roof.
Cataraqui Conservation's request for $77,000 to be used towards a pavilion and privy at Parrots Bay Conservation Area will be recommended for approval, as well as Odessa Agricultural Society's request for $30,500 to go towards facility upgrades. The committee will be recommending that just over $7,500 will be approved for Bath United Church's request of $12,571. This will go towards maintenance upgrades on the cemetery grounds. The committee denied recommending approval of nearly $7,400 for mobile heated dish dispensers at the Helen Henderson Care Center. Catherine Reynolds with Helen Henderson Care Center spoke about their request.
It's two pieces of equipment that will really serve the community for a long time. It'll come through our charitable foundation, directly improve the quality of life for more than 300 residents. We'll be using these for quite a while, probably 10, 15 years. Our home does serve one of the most vulnerable populations, and we've been doing it for more than 40 years. One of the critical aspects of our business, it really is mission critical, is our Gibson Family Healthcare Charitable Foundation. Funding is very limited with the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. The foundation allows us, and this is part of Helen Henderson Care Center, to get other pieces of equipment, do things that we wouldn't have the funding to do. The meal is a very important part of the day. It's a social time. It adds structure to the day, but it's going to also improve their dietary needs.
Nutrition manager with the center, Sean Stevenson, noted the importance of mealtime for residents.
Mealtime for them it's very important. It's a very large part of their day. And the plate warmers allow that to be delivered in the higher quality of the food temperature. And it also makes it safer for the residents. It's something that we've struggled with in the past, just due to the large volume of people that we're serving. Many large quality facilities have something like this, and just something we haven't been able to procure lately.
Committee member Shea spoke about why she wouldn't support the request.
This is an awkward one because it's a private corporation. The Charitable Foundation is an arm of a private corporation, and I just don't know that this is the correct use of our grant monies.
Committee Member Pierce explained another reason for not supporting the request.
It seems to me that serving hot meals should be absolutely basic and it should be an operating cost.
The committee also denied recommending approval of just over $38,000 for administrative expenses related to Kinsman's 2027 Dream Home. The committee will bring these recommendations to Council's next meeting. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Now over to Genevieve Hinch with a story from Keith Dempsey, LJR reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, about the reopening of Jerry Park.
Thank you, Dinah. The laughter of children filled Jerry Park again as families, community leaders, and project partners gathered to celebrate the grand reopening of the park and unveil its new, accessible, and inclusive playground in the Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands. The ceremony held on June 26 marked the completion of upgrades designed to ensure children of all abilities can enjoy the community space, with local families among the first to explore the new equipment following the official ribbon cutting. Mayor Corinna Smith-Gax said the reopening was particularly fitting during Recreation and Parks Month, noting the important role parks play in building strong and connected communities. She thanked council members, township staff, and project partners for their work in bringing the project to completion, recognizing the collaboration required to transform the playground into a more welcoming and accessible space. Count Angela Kelman spoke about the importance of play in childhood development and highlighted the significance of creating a playground that is accessible to everyone. Kelman also thanked playground supplier New World Park Solutions, Wendy Huggins, and Park and Water, which supplied the safety rubber play surface, for helping ensure the playground meets the public safety standards outlined in the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. Council members joined children, playground supplier Wendy Huggins, and excavating landscaping contractor Mark Greer in cutting the ceremonial ribbon, officially reopening the park for the community. Following the ceremony, children wasted little time putting the new playground to use, climbing, sliding, and exploring the equipment while township staff organized games and family activities throughout the afternoon. This upgrade is intended to provide a space where children of all abilities can play together while giving families an inclusive place to gather.
Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Tuesday, July 14th, slightly warmer conditions, 32 degrees and sunny here in the city of Kingston, but it's going to feel a great deal warmer than that, closer to 36 or 37 out in that bright sunshine, back down to 21 overnight. Wednesday, July 15th, 30 degrees is your high with a 30% chance of showers, mix of sun and cloud. A little bit cooler overnight. That rain will cool things off down to 17. Thursday, July 16th, 28 degrees with a 30% chance of showers, dropping down to 14 overnight. Coldest night of the week so far. Friday, July 17th, 28 degrees with a 30% chance of showers in the forecast, dropping down to around that 15 degree mark overnight. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, July 18th, 26 is your high with a 65% chance of rain in the forecast. Sunday, July 19th, 23 is your high with a 90% chance of precipitation, looking quite heavy at that. And then starting off next week, Monday, July 20th, daytime high of 23 with a 70% chance of rain throughout the day. Over now to Genevieve Hinch for CFRC's concert and events calendar.
Hello, Michelle Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario, I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny. And this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, community events, workshops, markets, or family-friendly activities, there is plenty of happening in Kingston this week, so let's get into it. Wednesday offers plenty to explore, beginning with Live at the Library featuring Pete Moss and music makers at Calvin Park Library. In the evening, games in the square return downtown while Swingin' Summer Concert Series continues at City Hall Amphitheater. Music fans can also catch Taryn McKenna at the Belvedere Hotel, Natalie Cran at the Bank Gastro Bar, Sean McCullen at the Cove Inn, and Petunia and the Vipers at Hotel Wolf Island. Thursdays feature the Kingston Public Market, Stories in the Square at City Hall Amphitheater, and Queen's Family Night at Elbow Lake, where families can enjoy an evening of wild watercolors. Later on, Movies in the Square returns with a free screening of Guardians of the Galaxy. Live music includes Adam Karch at the Cove Inn, Wayne Riley at the Helm Dockside Patio, Painted Moons, and Quentin Cottrey at the Hotel Wolf Island, and Tara McKenna at Bar Petunia. Friday is packed with live entertainment. Kicking It Country returns to the City Hall Amphitheater, while the Analog Island Music Festival kicks off at Hotel Wolf Island for the weekend. Other highlights include the LaSalle Causeway Spring Band as part of the Waterfront Concert Series, Off the Rocks Great Big Sea Tribute at the Sphere, Young Petty Stones at the Cove Inn, Whiskey Smoke at the RCHA Club, Squid Pistol at the Toucan, and the Oreos at the Merchant Tap House. Heading into Saturday, you can browse the Kingston Public Market, the Mini Market Series, and the Skilla Festival, or check out Chef Demos at the City Hall Amphitheater, and Saturday sessions in Confederation Park. The Analog Island Music Festival continues on Wolf Island, while music fans can also catch Rock for the Rydale at the Sphere. The Red Handed, as part of the Waterfront Concert Series, Hag and the Diaries at the Broom Factory, Sittin' Ducks at the Turnanog. Wrapping up things on Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market returns from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. alongside yoga in Battery Park and the Kingston Pop Choir's performance of Sure Thing at the Tet Center. The final day of the Analog Island Music Festival continues at Wolf Island. And music includes Taryn McKenna at Parsons Brewing Company, Head Over Heels at the Cove Inn, and live band karaoke with the Oreos at the Merchant Tap House. This has been your weekly events concerts calendar for July 13th through the 19th. For more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. The events calendar is brought to you by Flying V Productions, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. Be sure to check out their upcoming shows and events throughout the season. I'm Jenny. Thanks for listening and have a great week, Kingston.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.